7, Stan Phillips.
Happy Friday, Met fans, and what a happy Friday it is. Yes, the moment we've been waiting for, the Mets in the playoffs. It's been a while, but we are back. And it may not be the way we thought it would be, us being division champs, but with 101 wins and tying Atlanta, unfortunately losing the tiebreaker, you can't complain about the season the Mets had this year. Now, of course, the postseason is a different animal. It's a team that plays the best in October that wins. Can the Mets be that best team? Sure they can, with the pitching they have. Now, the big money pitchers are going to have to perform like big money pitchers. Case closed. October baseball is definitely a different animal. It's about power pitching and getting the key hits at the right time. Not necessarily home runs, but executing fundamentally, defensively, and offensively. And that's how the Mets team has been built this year. They're not a one-and-done swing for the fences, three-run homer like team like the Yankees or the Braves. They are built for October baseball. Whether or not that transpires into a World Championship, we shall see. The madness begins tonight. Who's ready? I know Citi Field will be rocking tonight, this weekend. Hopefully there's only two games at Citi Field. Don't want to see Jake go on Sunday, but if he has to, he will. But tonight we got Mad Max going on the mound, and it should be quite a night. Now, our beloved Metropolitans will be facing a familiar opponent when they take on the Padres in Game 1 of the Wild Card Round. Yu Darvish. Always been a big fan of his. He's very underrated, if you ask me, in the fact that he's one of the best power pitchers in the game today. And he will take the mound Friday and look to not just give San Diego a 1-0 series lead on the road, but defeat the Mets for the third time this season. Yes, Yu has already defeated us twice this season. The 35-year-old had 16 wins this season, but two of the more impressive victories came against our beloved Mets. On June 7, Darvish gave up just two hits and zero runs over seven innings in the win at home. When the veteran came to Citi Field on July 22nd, he had a similar outing, giving up just one run over seven innings to pick up another win. Despite the dominance, Darvish downplayed his success against the Mets this season, saying, "Though the Padres, through the Padres interpreter, I think this was luck." A more humble answer than say what the Braves' Spencer Strider said, but despite that, it's undeniable how great Darvish has been against the Mets. To defeat a team with 101 wins not once but twice is no easy feat. But according to Darvish, he didn't do anything different in his preparation for the Mets. He said, "I didn't change anything. I studied the Mets just like I would every team. Obviously, there are some really good hitters over there, and I was particularly in command of my pitches." Now, the Japan native credited his victories to his fastball command, but the 10-year veteran's ability to execute is what Met hitters point at as the reason why they struggled against him this season. Francisco Lindor said, "He's a really good pitcher. If he executes, it's going to be a tough challenge. But that goes for anybody. In the postseason, you face the best of the best. You're going to get everyone's best punch. We're going to get theirs, and we'll give it to them. We're going to give them ours," Francisco said. "That's what the postseason is." Now, Lindor went 0-for-6 with three strikeouts against Darvish this season. But the right-hander's dominance dates back years. In 8 career starts versus the Mets, check this out. He's with the Rangers, Dodgers, Cubs, and Padres, so he's been around. But against the Mets in that time period, he's 5-0 with a record of 2.56 ERA and 58 strikeouts. 5-0, according to StatMuse. Now, that also includes a win over the Mets just a year ago, where he gave up 2 runs in 5 1/3 innings. It's hard to see these stats and not think the worst will happen this Friday, but this is not the Met teams of the past. The 2022 Mets has the second best record in franchise history. They've had historic offensive seasons from Lindor and Pete Alonso. And they'll need them both to overcome a talented San Diego team and their ace. He's one of those marquee guys, but it's two talented teams competing against each other, Alonso said, who went 1-for-3 against Darvish this season. I know the boys are going to be doing our video, doing our homework, and taking off that past experience. We're going to be more than prepared and ready to go. So if you're a diehard baseball fan, not necessarily even a Met fan, a diehard baseball fan, you gotta love this pitching matchup tonight. And it'll be a great way to start off the postseason for the Mets and Padres. Now, you know what Friday nights at Citi Field have been all this year. Yes, Black Friday. And the Mets have worn their black jerseys and caps for Friday home games at Citi Field this season. And after some speculation, it seems the team will do the same for the Friday playoff opener against the Padres. Speculation began Thursday afternoon when the Mets changed their profile picture on Twitter to a white interlocking NY with a black background and orange outline. And now it seems that tease means exactly what fans thought. The last time the Mets wore black at home during the postseason was, during Game 4 of the 2000 World Series against the Yankees at Chase Stadium. Now, during the 2006 postseason, the Mets did not wear black at home in the NLDS against the Dodgers or NLCS against the Cardinals, though they wore their black road jerseys and caps once in that postseason during Game 3 in St. Louis. In 2015 and 16, the last 2 years the Mets made the playoffs before this year, the black jerseys and caps were not in the uniform rotation. The Mets, with a big push from players including Pete Alonso and many fans, brought back their black jerseys and caps only at home on a limited basis in the middle of the 2021 season, and have continued them wearing them on a limited basis at home this season. So hopefully tonight it brings them luck. I think the team's about 500 wearing those since they brought them back last year. So hopefully we improve on that record a bit. And if we do win, or even if we do lose, the Mets will face Blake Snell in Game 2 of the Wild Card Series. While the Mets haven't confirmed who their Game 2 starter of the Wild Card Series will be, the Padres did. Even though we kind of know it's Chris Bassitt. But we'll see what transpires. Could be Jake, you never know. Now, Blake Snell, former Cy Young Award winner, will take on the Mets in the second game of the first round Saturday night. Padres manager Bob Melvin confirmed the move Thursday in what seems like a no-brainer for the number 5 seeded team. Snell had an 8-10 record with a 3.38 ERA this season, but the story of the left-hander's year is more about what he's done in the last month. Over his last 7 starts, Snell had just a 3-3 record, but a minuscule 1.76 ERA and a 0.93 whip. Now, the 29-year-old has some postseason experience. In his time with the Tampa Bay Rays, Snell made 9 total appearances in the 2019 and 20 playoffs, with a 2-3 record and 2.83 ERA, as well as 1 save. Snell had pitched against the Mets twice this season. The first was in San Diego on June 6, when he went just 4 innings and gave up 4 runs in the loss. The second was at Citi Field on July 23rd, when he had opposite results. Snell pitched 5 scoreless innings to pick up the win. Excuse me, so how will the Mets lineup fare against Snell on Saturday? Well, it depends. Francisco Lindor had the toughest time against Snell, going 3-for-25, 120 in his career. Eduardo Escobar didn't fare any better, going 2-for-12, 167, but he does have 2 RBIs against him. Many of the Mets have fared relatively well, including Pete Alonso, 333, Mark Canha, 364, Brandon Nimmo, 333, and Starling Marte, 333. Interestingly enough, now I don't know if he's going to point or not, but Darren Ruff has had the most success against Snell, going 3-for-7, 429 with a home run, 3 RBIs, and 3 walks in his career against the lefty. Now, perhaps Buck Showalter will consider this when making his wild card roster. We'll see how the Mets use this information when they decide on their postseason roster later this morning. Now, we know Blake Snell is pitching Game 2, but we'll see who will pitch Game 2 for the Mets. Now, Met manager Buck Showalter revealed Thursday what many believe was the case when it came to who will be the Game 2 starter. The team will make that decision based on the result of Game 1 against the Padres on Friday. Showalter said the result will have some bearing. We know what we're planning to do, but some things are dictated by tomorrow night's game. Game 2 starter can be dictated by how we do tomorrow night. It could be similar to what San Diego is doing. What Showalter didn't realize was the Padres announced their Game 2 starter to be Blake Snell. But even if he knew, the team would likely wait to see if Max Scherzer could lead the Mets to a Game 1 victory and the series lead. What's different in the playoff format this season is the wild card as a best of three series. While Showalter didn't go into detail, it's why we believe that if the Mets win Game 1, they'll tap Chris Bassett to pitch Game 2 in order to save Jacob deGrom for the opener of the NLDS against the Dodgers. If the Mets win, lose Game 1, then we should expect deGrom to pitch a must-win game on Saturday. Showalter was asked point-blank whether Bassett will pitch Game 2 if they win Friday, and the skipper said he was not going to broadcast their plan to the Padres, but that everyone will know after Game 1 ends. But however, Friday shakes out. However, no matter what happens on Friday, Showalter is confident that DeGrom Bassett will be ready to pitch on short notice. He said, "They know. We talked about this a week ago at least. They've been aware for a long time where it falls. It's like if you get rained out, you'll be able to pitch. They know the order, how it may fluctuate. It's been the strength of our club. Guys don't let egos get in the way of it. Tell me when I contribute, and I will," is the mantra of the Mets starters. Now, the Mets will take on the Padres tonight at 8:07. So after the game, we'll have more details on what's going to happen.
In our rotation.
How confident are you that DeGrom or Bassett?
We'll take everything into play.
You know, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. You know, he's one of the reasons why he was in demand, because he's a multi-skilled guy that can, you know, help in a lot of ways. But, you know, obviously at 10 o'clock tomorrow, we'll have it out there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he did it. He did it yesterday and the day before. But different forms of comfort level, you know, the last few days.
What was the comfort level today?
Tomorrow. He's improving. Little by little. Well, because we haven't announced other than today, you know, it'll have some bearing. You're talking about obviously for these three.
Not even necessarily to announce, but for what you guys are planning to do.
We know what we're planning to do, but some things are dictated by tonight's game, or tomorrow night's game.
Some things meaning like the actual identity of the Game 2 starter?
Right. The Game 2 starter could be dictated by
the focus is completely on tomorrow night's game, but you know, when you're doing rosters and stuff without jeopardizing being able to put your best foot forward in these three games, you do have to at least consider that. Everybody does, you know. So the tiebreaker will always be what's best for these three games, but you know, we have people capable of pitching you know, and all through the rotation, one of the reasons we've been able to put together a pretty good year is that, you know, we've had some depth in our rotation.
How confident are you that DeGrom or Bassett can go, not necessarily knowing what day they're going to pitch at this point?
Oh, they know. We talked about this a week ago, at least, and they've been aware for a long time where it falls. And, you know, it's like if you got rained out, would you be able to pitch the next day? You know, they're faced with similar stuff, but, you know, they know the order, how it may fluctuate. But, you know, it's kind of been a strength of our club is the guys don't let their ego get in the way of it. You know, tell me when I can contribute and I will. You know, it's going to be tough. He's one of the best pitchers in the game. That's what you're going to see from here on out. And, kind of hit me the last three games here that reminded me of the quality of pitching we faced for the last three or four weeks. I mean, we saw some really good pitching, and you know, last three games wasn't at that level. So I'm going to see another good one. The margin of error is very small. One, to beat him, you have to have a good starting effort by your guy. And, you know, runs are going to be a premium. When you get a chance to cash something, you need to try to push it across. But guys with great track records have games where, you know, they're not as good as they have been in the past. That's why we go watch the games, because what should happen doesn't always happen. We've seen that with some of our guys. So we'll find out. You know, a lot of, you know, really at times carry six pitches. But, you know, you understand their percentages and what he's thrown, and then all of a sudden you prepare for all this and it's completely the opposite. We've seen that happen many times. Happened a few days ago. Somebody went completely a different direction than what they've done.
and we'll see. And you have to, you know, up here, you have to make the adjustments on the fly.
Buck, how much does DeGrom's blister play into the thought process of maybe not starting him in game two?
It's part of the equation, but I don't think it's. I think by the time he pitches, it shouldn't be an issue.
So it's. I mean, it's something he, I assume, is actively managing.
Yes. You know, if we detailed everything that these guys go through to get on top of, we would have a full state of, you know, I do it to try to make it easier on y'all not having to write and dwell on and talk about it.
Thank you.
I do it off you, so otherwise I don't tell you this guy's left toe has been bothering him. I don't know if he can push off, you know. Just, I mean, there are so many things like that with all 26 players that go on every day behind the scenes. One of the worst parts of my day is when Darth Vader, the trainer, walks in my office after everybody's done. I go, "What do you got?" When he goes, "Oh, all good today." Okay, stop, leave. It's always something.
There you go. Buck summing it up. As well as you can be prepared for this, you just never know what's going to happen. And that's the beauty of baseball. You just don't know what's going to happen. Now, the two regular players that are really going to have a lot of focus on them in the postseason are Francisco Lindor and Pete Alonso. Now, let's hear about what their takes are on this whole thing with the playoffs and the series and what's going on. Pete Alonso said, "To be honest, I really don't know what we're getting into. I played a lot of high-leverage games. I had postseason experience in college, playing in the College World Series for sure. I feel like it's helped. That's meaningful games there. Playing in really high and intense regular season games, packed houses. Obviously, the Subway Series, that's a playoff-like environment. Then there also, we play division rivals like the Phillies, Braves on the weekends. It's obviously high intensity." Lonzo said, "If I had to expect anything, it'd be like that. Again, I'm just really excited for this opportunity. This is something that we worked for all year, and this is why we play 162. Again, I'm just really excited and really happy to go and battle with these guys. It's a great team that we have. Again, just really looking forward to it. And I'm really looking forward to see what Pete can do in this situation. He does seem to like the pressure and the excitement of big game situations." Now, Alonso came out and said, "Regardless of the outcome of the regular season, we should really be damn proud of what we accomplished. As much as we could have, should have, we won 101 games. I think that's the second best record in New York Mets regular season history. So that's something really damn to be proud of. We're a resilient team. We have talent. We play the game the right way. I feel like that with the people we have the ability to be the last team standing. And regardless of where we're in at the playoffs, to get where we want to be, we have to beat everybody anyways. Like, to be a world champion, you have to beat everybody. Doesn't matter where. Doesn't matter when. You just have to do it." Now, Francisco Lindor added, "For me, disappointment is not my mind. It's not my mouth. That was yesterday's news. It's in the past. Everybody starts 0-0. It's a new time of the year. We have to focus on what we have in front of our feet. It's a blessing to be in the playoffs. To be in the playoffs is a blessing at the end of the day. I don't care whether it's the wild card or the World Series. It's an honor. It's a privilege to be here. Not everybody gets to be here. I have a lot of friends who are on the way home right now. And I get to put on a hat and a hoodie that says postseason. It feels pretty damn good to go to a clubhouse and smell the new gear that you get. I feel like a little kid." Lindor says, "To play at Citi Field, it means a lot in the postseason. It means a lot. To be at home in the postseason series, you know you're going to get the best of the fans cheering for us. It's special. It's been a minute since the New York Mets go to postseason, so I know our fan there is going to be very exciting, and I know their voices are ready to be very loud. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to sharing this experience with the boys, my family, and the fans." Alonso came out and said, "Yeah, I'm excited. I've never heard or seen a playoff crowd in person. I'm really excited to play this weekend. I hope the fans are behind us every single pitch. I hope they come ready because we're going to be ready. It's going to be really exciting. I hope they go buck wild and they're rowdy and they create an unbelievable home field advantage for us." Now, how about the pressure of having playoff-defining moments? Alonso said, "You can't let personal results define what we've accomplished so far this season as a team or individually. I feel like you do everything, you compete, and you do your best to be able to have a chance at this time of year. Whatever happens at the end of the year, I'm going to be proud and stand up high and accept the outcome. But I'm really excited to compete against the best and to compete in a world championship. Like I said, this is what it's all about. This is what all the hard work in the offseason, spring training, 162 games, this is what it's all for. I'm just really excited. I just want to be able to prepare myself mentally and physically to be able to flow through my area, flow through my zone, and accomplish things to help this team win. That's all I want. I want this team to win. Lindor added, a lot of us had good seasons this year. We stayed healthy, thank God. The postseason is different. You can't go into the postseason saying I had a good season. I'm going to do good in the postseason, or I had a bad season. I'm going to fix it in the postseason. You got to take it day by day. Work on your craft. Get better. Learn from each at-bat and focus on winning. Focus on little things, good things that will happen when you pay attention to the little details, and focus on winning the game day in and day out. If I go out there and go 4-for-4, that would be great. I want to perform. If I go out there and go 0-for-4 and we still win the game, it's great too. It doesn't do me any good to go 4-for-4 and lose the game. What are you going to say? Francisco had a good postseason, but they lost? I don't want that. I want to celebrate on the last day, whether I had a bad postseason or not. I want to be the last team standing. That's the job description, to be the last team standing. That's what you got to focus on, the little things, and focus on winning. Results will come to those who work as hard as they can. The game will give you something to cheer on. So there you have it, Francisco and Pete. Probably the two main focal points of the Met offense, taking the right approach to this. And it looks like they have the right mindset. So it is going to be great to see what transpires with those two. I think they'll have both have a good series. Now, one of the questions a lot of you want answers to is Starling Marte's status and other Met roster decisions. The status of Starling Marte's fractured right middle finger is the most intriguing question facing the Mets ahead of their 10 a.m. Friday deadline to finalize their wildcard roster. Marte participated in baseball activities Thursday, according to general manager Bill Yepler, and showed continued progress in the rehab of an injury that has kept him sidelined for at least 4.5 weeks. He can grip things, Yepler said. We're still waiting and see how he comes along. The Mets must decide if Marte will be in a position to contribute against the Padres. His right-handed bat was most missed in Atlanta last weekend when the Mets were swept 3 games with a low-octane lineup as a significant factor. Now, here are some of the decisions the Mets face in constructing their 26-man roster. Will the Mets go to 11 pitchers or carry a 12th? Within the framework of that question, Epler and manager Buchstrohl have decided how many would be relievers. Now, it's a best-of-three series. Carrying a fourth starter probably makes sense in case Max Scherzer, Chris Bassett, or Jacob deGrom can't answer the bell or leaves early with an injury. That would leave Taijuan Walker and Carlos Carrasco in play. What about Francisco Alvarez? The rookie catcher appears to be in good shape for a roster spot. That could hinge on whether or not Marte returns. Even so, if Marte returns, the Mets might not want or have a need for an extra outfielder. Tyron Anquin could choose Alvarez's powerful right-handed bat, but the 20-year-old Alvarez spent the final week of the regular season with the Mets and blasted his first major league homer on Tuesday. He did show pretty well. He took a process approach, and those kind of decisions he makes in the batter's box, he showed pretty well, and he swings with a 10. Now, what about the bullpen? Edwin Diaz, Adam Ottavino, Seth Lugo, Drew Smith, Trevor May, David Peterson, Joey Rodriguez, and Michael Givens give the Mets 8 arms. Will Trevor Williams get the nod over Givens? The fact that Williams pitched 6 innings Wednesday works against him receiving a roster spot for this round. Now, does Darren Ruff or Mark Vientos fit? That could be contingent, again, upon Marte's status and the number of pitchers carried by the Mets. Naquin is a safer bet than Vientos because he can play the outfield and fight a lefty bat off the bench. Ruff has been a disappointment but owns postseason experience. So in a couple hours, we'll see what transpires there. But the one man you got to be rooting for is Buck Showalter. As great as his managing career has been, he has yet to win a world championship. And will he be like Andy Reid and finally reach that plateau of being a champion and stop being baseball's Marty Schottenheimer? He's a great historic manager regardless. But you do want to see Buck win it all. That is what the game is all about. Of course, not everyone can win a championship. There are some managers who aren't half the managers of Buck Showalter who have won world championships. But you do want to see Buck win it. And I know we're all rooting for him. And it seems like the Showalter-Epler combination is doing pretty well. Showalter's doing great with the talent Epor's provided, and Epor's gotten the right guys in the right place. And I was a little skeptical about Epor, but he has done the job. And again, the Mets are picking the right people for the right positions finally under the Cohen regime. So we'll see what happens, but I am rooting for Buck. Okay, now it's that time of the podcast where we shamelessly plug our Facebook baseball group, New York Mets Baseball Way of Life. If you're a big Met fan and are on Facebook, check out the group, join the group. We'd love to have you. Great content and contributors there every day. And it's the, I guess you would call it the digital companion to this podcast. Also, if you're not subscribing to this podcast, please do. We try to put one up every day. And you'll be alerted by your favorite carrier when the next one is up and loaded. So please do subscribe. Now, as we always do in the podcast, we give you our trivia and Jeopardy question of the day. Today's trivia question: what Met player holds the record for most go-ahead RBIs in one season? And the Jeopardy, as always, two clues. First clue: established a Met season record for total bases in 1987 with 310, broken by Howard Johnson in 1989 with 319. Second clue: selected by the New York Mets organization in the first round, he was the first pick overall of the free agent draft on June 3rd in 1980. Lock in your answers, and we'll be back shortly at the end of the podcast to tell you how you did. Now, as we always do, it's time to wish some Met figures happy birthday. Two we're going to celebrate today: Jose Cardenal. He played with us in 1979 and 80. Jose had quite a major league career, however, we caught him at the tail end of his career. Happy birthday, Jose Cardenal. Very, very good, underrated player in his time. And happy birthday to Sammy Drake, who was an original Met in 1962. Had 52 at-bats altogether. And he was basically a second and third baseman and pinch hitter here and there. So happy birthday to Sammy Drake. Now let's talk about some of the things that we're discussing in the group. I posed a question the other day: when I say Gary Gentry, what is the first thing that pops into your head? John Tierney said winning pitcher, Game 3, 69 World Series. Ron Davis said the Felix Mian trade. Ciro Grassi said faded fast. I'm not even sure, was Felix Mian and Gary Gentry in the same trade? I'm going to have to check that one out. But we had good answers as always. And Warren Handy said somebody had to follow Seaver and Coos. And by golly, it was Gary Gentry. Then we also mentioned that the Mets are just the sixth team since divisions were formed in 69 to win 100 games and failed to win the division. None of the previous five won the World Series. They were the 21 Dodgers, 93 Giants, 01 Athletics, 18 Yankees, and 80 Orioles. So we'll see. Maybe the Mets can break that schneid. Sure hope so. And we mentioned that Jeff McNeil raised his average by 75 points from 21 when he batted 251 to 22, 326 to win the NL batting title. That's the largest gain by a National League player in a season prior to winning a batting title since Andres Big Cat Galarraga had a 243 average in 92 and hit 370 in 93. Then we touched on some of the accomplishments for Pete Alonso in the past four seasons. Led the MLB in homers in 19 with 53. Holds the rookie single season record home run record. Two-time home run derby champion. Third player to win back-to-back derby titles. Led the NL in RBI in 22, 131. Tied with Aaron Judge for the MLB lead. And he has the fourth most homers in his first four seasons with 146. And that includes the shortened 60-game COVID season in 2020. Amazing. Also, I mentioned that Bob Ojeda will throw out the ceremonial first pitch before Game 1 of the Padres versus Mets series on Friday. That'll be nice to see. And Pete Alonso was honest in his appraisal on not getting a bye despite winning 101 games. People look at the Atlanta series and they think that was the determining factor, but to be honest with you, we got swept by the Cubs like 3 weeks prior. He nailed it. And those are, like I said, every day we have good stuff in there. We had a nice meme that said, I've been through the Beltran strikeout, two collapses, Jerry Manuel, Jason Bay, and a Ponzi scheme. I'm going to enjoy this moment. We mentioned, when I say Jerry Grody was the first thing that pops in your head. Scott Emmerich came out and said, quite bluntly, defensive whiz. And that he was.
Somebody
he
who's
one of the best in this business. I think even Johnny Bench said if him and Grody were on the same team, Grody would have been the catcher.
Well, that.
So check it out. Good stuff in the group every day. And we did mention the fact that this is the 17th season, GKR. Gary, Ron, and Keith are now announcers together in the booth. And that ties the record of Bob Murphy, Lindsey Nelson, and Ralph Kiner. Two historic trios that broadcast the Met games throughout the years. Both solid. Congrats to both. Okay, now it's time to reveal the answers to our trivia question in Jeopardy. Once again, the trivia question was, what Mets player holds the record for most go-ahead RBI in one season? Well, the correct answer is Keith Hernandez of 36 go-ahead RBI in 1985. Congrats to our resident Met expert, John Tierney, on being the first to submit the correct answer. The Jeopardy clues were established a Met season record for total bases in 1987 with 310. That's been broken by Howard Johnson in 1989 with 319. Selected by a New York Mets organization in first-round pick, first pick overall of the free agent draft on June 3rd, 1980, the correct response is, who is Darryl Strawberry? Again, John Tierney nails it with the answer. Way to go, John. And that's going to wrap up our podcast today. And tomorrow we'll be talking all about Game 1, which starts at 8:07. Remember, the wild card round is being carried by the ESPN network. And yeah, what a matchup it's going to be. Yu Darvish for the Padres, Max Scherzer for the Mets. Oh, boy. This is what we live for, isn't it, Met fans? You were 16-8 with a 3.10 ERA and 197 Ks this year. Max, 11-5, 2.29, 173 Ks. Enjoy the game. This is what we live for, Met fans. Win or lose, let's go, Mets, and we'll be here to talk about it tomorrow. Enjoy it, a nice Friday. Autumn is here, and so is Met October Baseball. Talk soon.
Meet the Mets. Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life, because the Mets are really sucking the ball. Knocking those home runs over the wall. East side, west side, everybody's coming down to meet the M-E-T-S Mets of New streets. Where do they go? To meet the Mets! Oh, they're hollering and cheering and they're jumping in their seats. Where do they go? To meet the Mets! All the fans are true to the orange and blue, so hurry up and come on down, 'cause we got ourselves a ball club, the Mets of New York Town. Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life, because the Mets are really sucking the ball.